You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on Why Meditate. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Notes on Why Meditate, Working with Thoughts and Emotions by Matthieu Ricard. As always, we'll kick it off with a quote. Over the course of the last 10 years, I have also participated in several research programs intended to document the long-term effects of meditation practice on the brain and on behavior. This research has shown that it is possible to make significant progress in developing qualities such as attention, emotional balance, altruism, and inner peace. Other studies have also demonstrated the benefits of meditating for 20 minutes a day for a period of 6 to 8 weeks. These benefits include a decrease in anxiety, in vulnerability from pain, and in the tendency toward depression and anger, as well as strengthening the power of attention, boosting the immune system, and increasing one's general well-being. Thus, no matter what point of view you approach it from, whether that of personal transformation, the development of altruistic love, or physical health, meditation emerges as a factor essential for leading a balanced life rich in meaning. End quote. That is Matthieu Ricard from Why Meditate. Matthieu Ricard is a Buddhist monk who left a promising career in cellular genetics before leaving France to study Buddhism in the Himalayas over 37 years ago. Actively involved in the research on mindfulness and dubbed the happiest person in the world by various publications, he's an ideal guide to helping us get our meditation on. And this book is packed with big ideas. If you're looking for a quick reading why to and how to on meditation, with an emphasis on some of the spiritual dimensions, it's definitely a good choice. For now, let's take a peek at some of my favorite big ideas. The first one is the ultimate reason. Quote, "The ultimate reason for meditating is to transform ourselves in order to be better able to transform the world. To put it another way, we transform ourselves so that we can become better human beings and serve others in a wiser and more effective way. Meditation thus gives our life the noblest possible meaning." End quote. Why meditate? Here's the number one answer: to transform ourselves in order to be better able to transform the world. As Michael Beckwith tells us in Spiritual Liberation, check out those notes, he says, "An enlightened society can only be created by awakened beings." If we want to change the world, we've got to be the change. And meditation is one of the most powerful things we can do to really plug in and shine. Why is that? Let's explore some reasons. Leads us to the next big idea, which is calmness, kindness, and neuroplasticity. Quote, "To what extent can we train our mind to work in a constructive manner? For example, by replacing obsession with contentment, agitation with calmness, or hatred with kindness. 20 years ago, it was almost universally accepted by neuroscientists that the brain contained all its neurons at birth and that their number did not change in adult life. We now know that new neurons are produced up until the moment of death. Moreover, scientists speak of neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to continually change its structure and function in response to new experiences, so that a particular training, such as learning a musical instrument or a sport, can bring significant and lasting functional and structural changes in the brain. Mindfulness, altruism, and other basic human qualities can be cultivated in the same way. In general, if we engage repeatedly in a new activity or train a new skill, modifications in the neuronal system of the brain can be observed within a month. It is essential, therefore, to meditate regularly." End quote. Neuroplasticity, it's the scientific fact that our brains are continually changing their structures in response to the demands we put on them and the way we live. We talk about this in detail in the note on the talent code, where we learn about, quote, "a revolutionary scientific discovery involving a neural insulator called myelin, which some neurologists now consider to be the holy grail of acquiring skill. Here's why. Every human skill, whether it's playing baseball or playing Bach, is created by chains of nerve fibers carrying a tiny electrical impulse, basically a signal traveling through a circuit. Myelin's vital role is to wrap those nerve fibers the same way that rubber insulation wraps a copper wire, making the signal stronger and faster by preventing the electrical impulses from leaking out. When we fire our circuits the right way, when we practice swinging that bat or playing that note, our myelin responds by wrapping layers of insulation around the neural circuit, each new layer adding a bit more skill and speed. The thicker the myelin gets, the better it insulates, and the faster and more accurate our movements and thoughts tend to become. End quote. Literally every thought we have and every action we take changes our brain. Deliberately practicing a certain skill, whether it's a golf swing or seeing the world with a more optimistic or compassionate outlook, myelinates our neurons in such a way that our desired behaviors become more habitual and second nature. That's really cool stuff. The real benefits only come, however, with consistent effort. So, as always, here's to diligently, patiently, persistently, and playfully rocking the myelin. And that leads us to the next big idea, sitting with dignity. Your physical posture affects your mental state. If you assume a posture that is too relaxed, especially if you lie down, chances are that your meditation will strain to drowsiness. Too rigid, intense a posture, on the other hand, might lead to mental agitation. Thus, it is appropriate to take a balanced posture that is neither too tight nor too loose. End quote. How we should sit slash position ourselves during our meditation is a common question. Ricard goes into detail on the 7 points of proper posture in the book. Check it out for more details on that. For a high-level perspective on proper posture, I really like the way Jon Kabat-Zinn describes it in his great book, Wherever You Go, There You Are. See those notes. He says, quote, "When we describe the sitting posture, the word that feels the most appropriate is dignity. Sitting down to meditate, our posture talks to us. It makes its own statement. You might say the posture itself is the meditation. If we slump, it reflects low energy, passivity, a lack of clarity. If we sit ramrod straight, we are tense, making too much of an effort, trying too hard. When I use the word dignity in teaching situations, as in sit in a way that embodies dignity, everybody immediately adjusts their posture to sit up straighter. But they don't stiffen. Faces relax, shoulders drop, head, neck, and back come into easy alignment. The spine rises out of the pelvis with energy. Sometimes people tend to sit forward, away from the backs of their chairs, more autonomously. Everybody seems to instantly know that inner feeling of dignity and how to embody it." End quote. Love that. Want to know how to sit in meditation? Sit with dignity. A little PS here, our physical posture doesn't just affect our mental states during meditation. How we hold our bodies always affects our mental and emotional states. As David Reynolds tells us in his great book, Constructive Living, check out those notes, quote, "Depression can be created by sitting slouched in a chair, shoulders hunched, head hanging down. Repeat these words over and over. There's nothing anybody can do. No one can help me. I'm helpless. I give up. Shake your head, sigh, cry. In general, act depressed and the genuine feeling will follow in time. Feelings follow behavior." End quote. So, let's meditate, walk, stand, work, and do everything with a level of dignity. And that leads us to the next big idea, working out our mindfulness muscles. Quote, "The goal of meditation is precisely to make your mind smooth and manageable so that it can be concentrated or relaxed at will, and especially to free it from the tyranny of mental afflictions and confusion. The antidote to distraction is cultivating vigilance. Whenever you notice that your mind has wandered off, bring it back to the object of meditation. If you suddenly realize you have been distracted, it shows you have recovered your mindfulness. So you should be happy about this instead of being discouraged and regretful. The more often you notice that you have been distracted, the more your mindfulness is progressing. Remember also why you are meditating. Your goal is not to waste time giving free rein to your thoughts, but to use your meditation time to gain freedom from suffering." End quote. I like to think of meditation as kind of like strength training for my mind and my mindfulness. Just as we lift weights to get stronger and run to build our aerobic capacity, sitting in meditation develops our mindfulness muscles so we can put our attention where we want it, when we want it. Is there anything more powerful than that? Correct answer, nope. Next big idea is little by little is the way to roll. Quote, it is essential to maintain the continuity of meditation day after day, because in this way, your meditation practice gradually gains substance and stability. It is like the way a small trickle of water, little by little, turns into a stream and then a river. The traditional texts state that it is better to meditate regularly and repeatedly for short periods of time than to do long sessions every now and then. For example, you could devote 20 minutes a day to meditating formally and also take advantage of short breaks in your daily activities to recall the experience you had during your formal sessions, even if only for a few moments. End quote. As Buddha tells us, see the notes on the Dhammapada, and I like to quote this one often, quote, little by little a person becomes evil as a water pot is filled by drops of water. Little by little a person becomes good as a water pot is filled by drops of water, end quote. Imagine a beautiful, delicate water pot, elegantly designed, simply gorgeous. If you wanted to fill it up, would you take a fire hydrant to it? Nope. You'd carefully fill it up little by little, rather than going gonzo and shattering it. Same thing with our personal transformation. Whether we're talking about our meditation practice, our exercise program, our optimism development, our relationships, our creative work, whatever, little by little, consistency over intensity, that's where it's at. So how are you showing up? Are you getting all amped up for a day or weekend or week and then fading away? Here's to the consistent drop-by-drop practices that fill up that beautiful little pot. Next big idea is, what's your mood got to do with it? Quote, being diligent in your practice should not depend on your mood of the moment. Whether your meditation session is enjoyable or irritating, easy or hard, the important thing is to persevere. It is when you don't feel like meditating that it might have the most beneficial effects. Because at those times, meditation is working directly against some obstacle that stands in the way of your spiritual progress. End quote. So, this idea is huge. Capital H period, capital U period, capital G period, capital E period, huge. All caps. Think about it. When do you not feel like meditating? When you're in a craptastic mood, right? Well, guess what? That's exactly when you need to meditate or exercise or eat well or whatever. That's when you need it the most. This is such a simple truth, but applying it to my life has had huge, profound effects. Beckwith tells us, again, see the notes on spiritual liberation. He tells us this. I love quoting this one too. The gift of self-discipline is that it has the power to take you beyond the reasoning of temporary emotion to freedom. Think of how empowered you felt on occasions when you haven't given in to the I don't feel like it syndrome and honored your commitment to yourself. What does not feeling like it have to do with it? The combination of love for something with the willingness to do what it takes to practice it, aka discipline, results in freedom. End quote. Carol Dweck, the author of Mindset, says this. Check out those notes too. Quote, it would be nice if this didn't happen, but it's irrelevant. It might be easier to mobilize for action if I felt better, but it doesn't matter. The plan is the plan. Remember the depressed students with the growth mindset? The worse they felt, the more they did the constructive thing. The less they felt like it, the more they made themselves do it. The critical thing is to make a concrete, growth-oriented plan and to stick to it. And David Reynolds puts it brilliantly in Constructive Living. Check out those notes. He says, the mature human being goes about doing what needs to be done regardless of whether that person feels great or terrible. Knowing that you are the kind of person with that kind of self-control brings all the satisfaction and confidence you will ever need. Even on days when the satisfaction and confidence just aren't there, you can get the job done anyway. End quote. In short, what does feeling like it have to do with anything? Commit and just do it. Seriously, trust me on this. This is big. All right, the next big idea is three times. Quote, cultivating mindfulness does not mean that you should not take into account the lessons of the past or make plans for the future. Rather, it is a matter of living clearly in the present experience, which includes all three times. End quote. This is important. I talk about it in my book in a mini chapter called The Tolle Trap. Check that out. For now, we'll let Nathaniel Brandon bring the point home with his genius wisdom. He says this, being present to what we are doing does not mean being in the now in a way that drops all connection to past and future. Living consciously entails being in the present without losing the wider context. The context is there as background, and what we are doing is foreground. Then we are in the moment, but not trapped in the moment. This is the state that makes optimal action possible. I stress this point because injunctions like be here now are sometimes interpreted or misinterpreted to mean a shrinking of awareness to encompass only the immediate moment, with the rest of one's knowledge cast into oblivion and with no concern for the future consequences of one's acts. The ultimate absurdity of this understanding of be here now is captured in the cartoon showing a man falling from a skyscraper who remarks mid-flight, "So far, so good." I love that. All right, the next big idea is thought after thought, emotion by emotion. Quote, we should also understand that it is the accumulation and interlocking of fleeting emotions and thoughts that create our moods. These moods can last for a few hours or a few days, and over the long term, form our character traits and tendencies. That is why if we learn to deal with our thoughts and emotions in a good way, little by little, thought after thought, emotion by emotion, day after day, in the end, we will be able to transform our way of being. This is the essence of mind training and meditation as they affect our emotions. End quote. Love that. So it's all about learning to get just a little better at dealing with our thoughts and emotions, a little quicker to notice when we're slipping, a little quicker in bringing ourselves back to our most empowered responses, little by little, day after day after day, month in and month out. We reshape ourselves into our highest visions. Can I get an amen? Pretty please. All right, the next big idea is pickpockets and forest fires. Quote, if every time a powerful emotion arises, you learn to deal with it intelligently, not only will you master the art of liberating emotions at the moment they appear, but you will also erode the very tendencies that cause the emotions to arise. In this way, your character traits and your way of being will gradually be transformed. This method might seem difficult at the beginning, especially in the heat of the moment, but with practice, you will gradually get used to it. When anger or any other afflictive emotion begins to hatch in your mind, you will be able to identify it on the spot and be able to deal with it before it gets out of hand. It's a little like knowing the identity of a pickpocket. Even if he mingles with the crowd, you can spot him immediately and keep your eye on him so that he won't be able to steal your wallet. Thus, by becoming more and more familiar with the mechanisms of the mind and by cultivating mindfulness, you will reach the point where you no longer let sparks of nascent emotions turn into forest fires that can destroy your own happiness and that of others. End quote. How beautiful is that? We come back to this theme again and again, noticing our negativity right as it arises and not letting it get out of hand. And that leads us to the final big idea here, which is pulling your plants. Quote, excessive effort can also result from impatience or exaltation, two states that lead nowhere. If you begin climbing a high mountain at a run, your lungs will soon force you to stop. In the same way, if you draw a bow too far, it will break. Or if you try to cook on too high a flame, you will end up burning your food. Demanding immediate results is an aspect of unsteadiness of mind or laziness. His Holiness the Dalai Lama joked, in the West, people would like enlightenment to be fast, easy, and if possible, cheap. In the same way that it takes patience to grow a crop, steadiness is indispensable for the practice of meditation. It does no good to pull your plants to make them grow faster. End quote. That's awesome. Reminds me of Eknath Esrarn's wisdom from his great book on meditation called Conquest of Mind. Check out those notes. He says, quote, in Sanskrit, we have a word which means heroes at the beginning. People who take up a job with a fanfare of trumpets, but soon find that their enthusiasm is tiptoed down the back stair. Those who go far in meditation are the ones who keep on plugging. They may not be very spectacular, they may never hear a trumpet, but they keep on trying day in and day out, giving their best in every situation and relationship, never giving up. Such people are bound to reach their goal. End quote. As I say all the time, let's realize it's all about the consistency over the intensity and not be heroes at the beginning who run out the back door, huh? Here is to getting our meditation on. That wraps up our note, Why Meditate by Matthieu Ricard, who, as we said, was a Buddhist monk, who is a Buddhist monk, who had a promising career in cellular genetics before leaving France to go to the Himalayas to study Buddhism. He's a best-selling author, translator, and photographer, and an active participant in current scientific research on the effects of meditation on the brain. He lives in Nepal and dedicates much of his time to humanitarian projects in the Himalayas. Find out more about him at MatthieuRicard.org/EN if you'd like to check out his site in English. So if you like this note, I think you'll also dig the note on Conquest of Mind, Wherever You Go, There You Are, The Relaxation Revolution, Spiritual Liberation, and Constructive Living. We've got some awesome quotes in the sidebar here. These are all from Matthieu Ricard, unless I say otherwise. We'll start with, "It is a pity to underestimate the capacity we have to transform our minds. Each of us possesses the potential needed to free ourselves from the mental states that perpetuate our own suffering and that of others. The potential to find inner peace for ourselves and contribute to the happiness of all beings. This process requires determination, enthusiasm, and perseverance. It requires what Shantideva calls joy in virtuous ways. To be free is to be the master of ourselves. Everyone knows that it takes time and perseverance to master an art, a sport, a language, or any other discipline. Why should it not be the same with training the mind? It is a worthwhile adventure. We're not talking about acquiring some ordinary ability, but rather about a new way of being that will determine the quality of our entire life. For a plant to grow well, you have to water it a little every day. If you just pour a bucket of water on it once a month, it will most likely die between waterings. The same applies to meditation. Again, a big occasional effort does not have the same beneficial effect as less spectacular effort that is more constant. Practitioners are also advised not to place too much importance on various inner experiences that might arise during meditation. Understand that, just as a bird needs two wings to fly, you must develop wisdom and compassion simultaneously. Wisdom is a correct understanding of reality, and compassion is the desire for all beings to be liberated from the causes of suffering. A third form of laziness is not having the determination to do immediately what you know to be the most important thing and wasting your time instead on minor activities. To remedy this, establish priorities among your projects. And remember that, while your days are numbered, ordinary activities are like waves on the ocean. There is no end to them. And finally, so the ultimate goal of meditation is to acquire the ability to liberate all beings from suffering and contribute to their well-being. That is a quick look at this great book, Why Meditate? Working with Thoughts and Emotions by Matthieu Ricard. I really hope you enjoyed it. As you know, I'm a huge fan of meditation, and I'm really inspired to help you make meditation a more consistent part of your life. It just needs to be 12, 15 minutes a day. We know that changes our genetic expression. We talked about that in The Relaxation Revolution. Check out the note on that, and go out there and rock it. Hope you enjoyed. Look forward to sharing more with you soon. Have an awesome day. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to www.philosophersnotes.com to download more.